often hear people saying, well, these guys were real heroes. And they were. A lot of our boys were heroes. But I think me in my own heart thought that the people back home that furnished us with planes, guns, tanks, ammunition, food, they were the heroes. And I still think that if it wasn't for them, we'd have never won the war. And these guys that threw the bombs down at them.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
And the Battle of the Bulge was not fun. But I think I personally thought my worst enemy was the cold. We were outside 24/7, out in the fields. We couldn't be in the buildings because we had to see where the planes were. And I tell you, there wasn't a minute went by that you weren't cold. And that's all you thought of is, how can I get warm? How can I get warm? And I think I didn't thaw out till the war was over. So, and I was asked a few times, well, how'd you feel about the war? I said, well, it was a great experience. I learned a lot. I'm glad I did it. I don't think I want to do it again. Thank you.
I think it's really important to recognize that there were so many different theaters and so many different places that we were fighting this war, whether it was in England or in Italy, and we certainly cannot miss the war in the Pacific or, of course, the United States Navy. And we're very happy to have Don McPherson here, who flew the Hellcat during World War II. And I know, Ben, you had some questions for Don.
I do. It's Ensign McPherson's and my great honor to represent the Department of the Navy tonight at a panel dominated by Air Force and Army guys, so we're going to do our best. I will say Don earned his commission as an ensign and his wings in August 1944, and was assigned to fodder squadrons and learned how to fly the Grumman Hellcat. And there's a Hellcat here today that has special meaning to you because it's painted in an airplane that you flew during the war. And I'd love to know your impressions after your first flight in a Hellcat. So coming from training and stepping into that big fighter, how did it feel?
Well, we had been our final squadron had been at Corpus Christi, and our main plane there to train in was the SNJ, which the Army calls the Texan. And I found it fairly easy to transition from that to the Hellcat. It just seemed like the controls and everything felt quite similar. The one thing that they did, you know, of course you only have one seat, and that was, you know, where you had an instructor before, you know, that would take you up in your first flights. Well, what they did at Daytona Beach, they put you in the cockpit and you sat in there for however long you wanted to and memorized as many as the gauges and controls and everything that you could. And then they blindfolded you. And then, of course, you didn't have to pick out every little toggle or everything, but you really had to be able to locate blindfolded the instruments, the controls that you normally would have to do in flight. You know, so you didn't have to worry about looking at where is this and where is that. And so we qualified in that, and immediately it seemed to be a really good plane to learn to fly, and so it wasn't but a few days why we were making formation takeoffs. We were flying a lot of formation flying, and then we started in doing what the Navy called field carrier landings, which would be on a grass strip with a big circle on it, and it was to prepare you eventually for carrier landings. And in this test, then you didn't normally have to take, then, where you had to land your, come around and land your wheels in that circle. Usually they wanted you to make like 8 straight, you know, and then you would qualify for it. And this not only taught you to handle the airplane, mainly from the standpoint of if you overshot, maybe you could lower a wing and push a little opposite rudder, and we called it slipping the airplane so that it would lose altitude faster, and those the type of things. So that was our transition, and we immediately then they started forming us into divisions of 4, and that was carried on then into combat. But we always flew in divisions of 4. We'd have a division leader. I flew with the wingman on my division leader. You had a section leader, and you had a fourth man in the division. They kind of nicknamed, I've forgotten your name now. But anyway, Tailing Charlie. And so that way they, you know, you, I was to protect the division leader. Tailing Charlie was, his responsibility was the section leader. So that's kind of way we started that part of it.
Excellent. And you were, ultimately you were assigned to VF 83, that squadron was assigned to the USS Essex.
Yes.
And so in the spring of 1945, the Essex, VF 83, and yourself were off Iwo Jima.
Right.
And could you talk a little bit about what your squadron's primary mission was during that operation?
Well, we had joined the Essex in the Caroline Islands, and of course I had joined them just before we went into combat, so I hadn't flown with any of them. I didn't know any of the guys and so forth, but when we first started into the back into the heavier combat zone, why, I was still an extra pilot. But after a few days, because of an accident or two, why, then I was assigned to a division. Our call sign was Wonder 5. And so I started flying with them. And by that time, when after we left in Ulithi Harbor there in the Carolinas, why, we, quite shortly, we were within flying distance to the Iwo Jima. But it was the latter stages of the war in the Iwo Jima, which had been a rough one. And then also, it was kind of a little bit the wind-up of the Philippines. So that gives you kind of the time period we're talking about. Then the war just kind of changed, because earlier we had less pilots than the Japanese had, and of course as far as the fleet is concerned, at one time it was kind of balanced. Maybe they had to speed it a little bit, but when we went aboard the Essex in Ulithi, we were all totally surprised at the huge number of ships that we had, that we had gained, you know, since the fiasco at Pearl Harbor. And so this time then, we had quite a few carriers, you know, in the mix. And the reason the war changed then was the Japanese, now that we had more than they had, they changed tactics. You know, usually before there was quite a bit of dogfighting going on, but now they changed. They decided if they were going to have to be able to stay in this war, they were going to have to start attacking our platforms of flying, which is the aircraft carrier. And so for the month of, the latter part of March, the complete month of April and partway into May, the Kamikaze Suicide Corps is very active. There were times when some of our gun crews on the anti-aircraft gun crews on the ship, maybe for almost a week, they'd kind of almost eat and sleep at their gun mounts because there would be a bogey or two, you know, on the radar screen, you know, which would be detrimental to them. And so we ended up then shooting down quite a few airplanes. And we, at one time, there was a, I think that was on about April the 3rd or the 6th, there was one of the smaller islands called Kikishima, and it had an airfield, and I guess the people that managed all the tax and stuff decided that maybe we should go over there and kind of mess that up because they thought maybe some of those suiciders were based from there. So they sent Division 4, our division, over there, and we were carrying rockets and, of course, were 50 caliber machine guns, and so we tore the place up pretty bad. We didn't find any airborne aircraft and just a few parked ones, so apparently most of their planes were out on missions. So we tore that place up pretty bad. We even tore up their airfield some and their hangars and everything that we thought was valuable to them. And we were on the way back to the ship and just got started back, and we probably weren't any higher than maybe 1,800 feet off the water. All of a sudden, I spotted two VAL dive bombers on a converging course, but they were real low in the water. So I was lucky that I still had my guns off safety, and so all I had time to do is just shove the nose down and put my gun sight on and then squeeze the trigger, and I saw the pilot slump forward and he crashed into the ocean. But then I wondered what happened to the second one, so I wondered whether the other guys were able to take care of that. Well, I made a wing over and a tight turn to see, and that plane was headed for this air base. Well, I put full throttle to the Hellcat, and it responded. That 2,000 horsepower engine responded really well, and I was catching up with it, and I was just ready to squeeze the trigger, and my division leader on the radio, he told me, he said, "Don, get out of there, they're shooting at you from the shore batteries." Well, I squeezed the trigger anyway, and then that one exploded, and so then I made a really tight turn and some evasive action, you know, to get out of there without being shot down myself. Well, what's come to find out, the reason the other three guys in my division hadn't taken on that person, there were other airplanes that I hadn't seen there. So my division leader shot down a VAL, which is a dive bomber. The section leader got one. And then the tail in charge, the last guy, he shot down a Lily, and I'm not quite sure what that was. I don't have any way of looking that up anymore in my memory. I don't remember what a Lily was anymore. But anyway, we each got our first hits in, and so then we started on west farther and began flights against Okinawa.